Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, we are joined by John Railton. John is the Salesforce Capability Lead for Xero in New Zealand. Through the episode, we discuss John's career before Salesforce and also a bit about his education, which kind of leads nicely into the role that he now performs. We discuss how he found his way into the Salesforce ecosystem and the roles he's played over the years. We look at the differences he found between working for a partner and working for an end customer, and why he prefers working for an end customer, which is where he is now. We look at leading teams and how he initially found the transition into people management and people leadership. And we also focus a little bit on managing up, not just down, and working with the different stakeholders that he works with within his business. We look at the differences he found between the New Zealand market where he is and where he has been before, and also the Australia market where he spent some time a couple of years back where he came across to Sydney to do some contracting. We also look at his current role and what the challenges of a Salesforce capability manager are and what the day-to-day challenges are. And overall, just a really good chat with a great guy. This was a really, really interesting podcast, something I really enjoyed recording. And I hope you enjoyed the episode too. If you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
So John Railton, you're finally on my podcast and I'm pleased to have you here because we've had a lot of communication over the years, be it Salesforce, be it Jim, lots of different topics. And you're an interesting guy. So yeah, really excited to run through your career and a bit more about you.
Yeah, cool, man. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So look, let's kick off where I always like to start. And I like to go way back and look at what you wanted to do and before you even had ever heard of the Salesforce platform. So what was your kind of career when you were growing up in the early days?
Well, yeah, before Salesforce, my dad ran his own IT company for a while. So that really got me into computers when I was really young. I started off as a hardcore gamer, actually. If you didn't know that one.
I didn't know. Then, I wouldn't have guessed that either.
Yeah. People don't really guess that I'm an IT geek at heart. Yeah, but I love computers, love technology. Started off with that passion from my father. And then I went into the world of web design, web development, which is mostly front-end development now. So they're called FEDs. So I was a graphic designer, web designer, a web developer for a number of years. Enjoyed that side of things. This was well before Angular was around and things like that. And that's really what kicked me off into the technology space in a professional way. And, you know, it developed my love for, you know, how to build things and create things from scratch and to showcase it in a way that's a really cool presentation layer and things like that.
Yeah.
And all this stuff was before Salesforce was even around, right? So that's what really got me into the journey of IT and work here. And it really kick-started my career.
So how long were you operating as a dev for?
3 to 4 years.
Yeah. So then how did you then come to hear of Salesforce or get that break? And was dev something you did in Salesforce initially?
So my first break came when I had an introduction with a special person that actually was the director of a Salesforce Platinum partner here in New Zealand. Just a coffee chat originally. And I was lucky to get the opportunity to get onto the Salesforce gravy train really early back in the day. He saw some potential in me based on my achievements, my academic area and my learnings. And he gave me the opportunity to start being a Salesforce consultant and working for him. So that's how I really got into it. It was an opportunity at the time, and I took it with two hands and never looked back.
So what did Salesforce look like back then? And when was this? Like, when are we talking?
Oh, this was, about 10 years ago now, about over a decade. It's a no trailhead. Lots of certifications that don't exist anymore, you know, and there's a lot of self-learning and baptism by fire. So, you know, being thrown in the deep end and just learning to swim. So working for a number of big clients around the APAC region, you know, and actually just trying to figure out a way through a lot of the projects and initiatives early on in the days, and a lot of best practice and stuff back then. Wasn't really documented.
There was
some stuff, right? But, you know, it was a journey, to be honest, and a continuous one. And it still is today, right? There's just more resources and things for people from. But back then, there kind of wasn't. Yeah.
So back then, predominantly like sales and service cloud, right?
Yeah. So there's no customer 360. You know, they still had the old design. It was still classic, no lightning and things like that. You know, so there's lots of cool stuff today that wasn't really around back then.
Yeah. So then that was your first consulting role. Since then, what kind of roles have you? Have you always been like a functional person? You never strayed into that dev side with your dev background?
So when I was studying at university, I developed a love and passion for leadership and management. I studied a Bachelor of Business, double majoring in management and business information systems. As I mentioned before, I was over in the Netherlands for a foreign exchange at one of the top business schools in Europe.
Sure.
And I ended up graduating as one of the top business graduates in the world with the highest grade point average in my university, top business information systems graduate and top undergraduate. And that was because it was a real big passion of mine to learn about the subject as a whole. So development really wasn't a big thing for me. It's sort of like I was good at it, being a web developer and stuff like that. But what I really wanted to do was deal more in terms of, you know, working with people more so and working a lot with leadership. So, but to get there, you kind of need to earn your stripes first, right?
Sure.
So Salesforce functional consultant is the route that I took, you know, so rather than Salesforce development. And the first role I had at the Platinum Partner was Salesforce consultant, obviously APAC projects and initiatives, then moved on to become a Salesforce senior consultant. Then I actually left the Salesforce world and created my own business for a while.
Was that, was that the meal delivery?
Yeah. So that
Yeah,
it's called Fitness Meals, working with nutrition and,
yeah,
and fitness and stuff. That was a really awesome endeavor. I learned a lot as a person. I grew a lot as a person while I was running my own little company back then for a number of years.
And that was kind of before its time, right? Because now that's everywhere. But back when you started it, it was probably a rare thing to have fitness meals delivered.
Yeah, man, it's huge today, right? But back then, it wasn't the thing. And back then, we had like this built a mini calculator that actually calculated all your calories, macronutrients, protein, fats, carbohydrates, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
to consume, and then we delivered the meals to your door. So it was ahead of its time. It was kind of leading edge.
Yeah, nice.
And my daughter was born, and then the business, you know, operating revenue and actually, you know, trying to provide for your daughter at the same time, you sort of have to weigh up decisions. So I went back to Salesforce again, Salesforce Consulting, and back at the partner and back in the ecosystem before I joined Les Mills International, actually, as a Salesforce functional lead.
I know you have a passion for fitness, and obviously that's something I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, but getting into a role like that, obviously, I guess Les Mills probably isn't the kind of workouts that you do on the whole, but working in the fitness industry, was that like just for you as a fitness enthusiast, like a dream?
Yeah, it was a dream role. It was awesome, man. And yeah, obviously I don't really dabble too much in the classes, you know, the body pump and stuff like that. I rather focus on strength training. And classic bodybuilding and things. But, you know, Les Mills is part of that whole journey. So they've got, you know, 170,000 instructors worldwide now teaching all their programs around the world. And a lot of that goes through like Salesforce and stuff. And they've got the huge gyms and things. So it was a dream role combining both Salesforce and fitness at the same time. And while I was there, I was part of some awesome Salesforce implementations around the world, actually, in Sweden and in Germany. So I got to do a bit of travel around there before being promoted to the applications manager and actually leading and managing and looking after the Salesforce team at Les Mills and the platform globally.
Yeah, nice. And one thing I should add for anyone that's watching the video is that I'm really glad this isn't a video we're doing sat on the sofa behind me, because otherwise you'd absolutely be dwarfing me. You're like talking of bodybuilding. I think you're 6'5", right?
Yeah. 6'5". Yeah, 6'5" and a half. Yeah, I hit my head on doorways most of the time. But it's good that I'm sitting in a chair.
Yeah. And so COVID did me a favor here. Otherwise, we could have been doing this face-to-face and I'd have, share how small I am. So, yeah, obviously then going into applications management, so you were now getting into the roles that you'd always wanted, right? So managing large teams, managing teams and products, right? So how did that transition go for you from being a consultant to then working for an end customer and managing a big team and platform?
Yeah, it was actually really, it's always an interesting journey, right, starting off as a leader for anyone. But I took a lot of the theories and stuff that I learned from, you know, my university and my degree and my learnings there And also from sports that I used to play in the past as well. A lot of that leadership stuff and people management stuff is applicable across the board, right? So you can take a lot of the stuff that you've learned and actually start to apply it. So I was actually excited to actually be able to have the opportunity to apply lots of the stuff that I really wanted to do, right? So a lot of the stuff from like Patrick Lencioni, you know, his work, John C. Maxwell, lots of the stuff I learned from like Stanford, the management theories, HBR. I was really keen to start applying those learnings to a team environment. And that was one of the first chats I got. And I just keep going from there. And that it went on to other roles after that too.
So as a leader, how do you deal with like making mistakes? Because I think like you're in everyone's eyesight, right? So if you're new to management, which a lot of people that we speak to day to day are looking, are striving to become managers. But then how do you deal with like, oh, I've dropped the ball here, or I've made a mistake, and you've got a team of people that are aware of that, like in a early leadership role? Or maybe you didn't make any mistakes, I don't know.
No, plenty of mistakes, right? It's the only way to learn. If you keep failing, you're going to grow as a person, right? You can't just hide away from some of that stuff. And when you do make the mistakes, as you just mentioned, you know, being honest and transparent, being authentic and genuine, and, you know, owning up and saying when you're wrong is really important. You know, and what you do in front of people as a leader is amplified times four, right? People are seeing you in the spotlight all the time. You know, so, you know, if you do make a mistake, it's going to be seen in front of lots of people, but you have to understand that we're all human at the end of the day. And, you know, and other people need to understand that too and show a bit of empathy. It's a tough place to be in at times. There's nowhere to hide, you know, but, you know, if you build a safe environment, a psychologically safe environment where it's okay to fail, make mistakes and grow, then it's okay to do that. And then you can go in there with, you know, your bravery and your courage and show some vulnerability, knowing that people are going to understand if you make mistakes as a leader. And if you reflect that and be a good role model, right, it's going to showcase, and other people are actually going to take on those learnings as you know, and you can develop them too.
Sure. And that's another point, right? Because it's not just like leading is developing as well. So having the ability to develop people, is that something that came naturally to you?
Yeah, that's you know, one of my strengths from the Clifton Gallup's strengths is development or developing people. And also including people. So I try to put people first and foremost in everything that I do. It's my number one priority, no matter where I am. And then Salesforce and technology always comes after, because that's always going to be there, right? You know, but I've had some bad leaders in the past that have taught me what bad leadership is about. So I know what the antithesis is there. You know, I know what not to do now as a leader. But growing people is really important. It really motivates them, right? Having that purpose to fulfill them when they wake up in the morning and go to work or go to a team environment to go do something, you know, giving them that opportunity to grow their own potential is something that's, you know, intrinsically motivating to them rather than an extrinsic carrot that you can just wave in front of them. So if you can actually find that fire that lights up inside them, you know, where they want to be in 5 years' time and try to help them in that journey, you know, you're going to retain the talent that you need in your team.
Yeah, that's so important, especially in a market like Salesforce, right? Because like you said, the technology will always be there, but retaining talent is one of the biggest challenges that anyone has. And obviously, it helps when you work for a good brand like you do, and also you have interesting projects. But being able to take someone on a journey and seeing that you're investing in them is you know, probably the biggest part of that battle of retaining talent.
Yeah, and it's really rewarding too, right? As a leader, it's really rewarding to see people grow and develop and see all these people go to new heights and, you know that you've been helping them in some way or another. And, you know, and if it's not rewarding, then maybe leadership isn't for you and you should be looking at something else.
Yeah, I think we've discussed that off recording about, you know, managing doesn't come naturally to me, but maybe seeing managing and leading as different things is important, right?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously these the traditional, you know, management or leadership ways, you know, from Peter Drucker and stuff in the 80s, you know, that's still around today. You know, they're all directing people, the power over sort of mentality. You still see a lot of people like that, you know, in traditional organizations such as governments, stuff like that. You know, but where I am today in terms of being at Xero as a Salesforce capability manager, you know, in the new age technology, there's been a leadership, right, moving from the traditional management style to a new way of leading where people are first. And I think a lot of people are noticing that lately, that they have to sort of unlearn some of the bad habits from the past and try to learn the new way of, you know, catering for the new generation and the people first and foremost.
Yeah. Yeah, I think obviously with millennials making up such a big pool of the workforce right now, you can't lead in any other way than kind of how you mentioned the new age and lighting that fire in people, I guess.
It's really important, right? Because if you don't adapt, you know, you're gonna be left behind. It's one of those things where it's sort of like, you know, it's not a marathon anymore. There's no 10-year goals or 5-year goals. You know, the 2-year goal is actually a really long time now. Rather than being a marathon and a jog, it's a sprint. You've sort of got to be like a cheater and be really agile and adapt at the times, and especially with the new generation coming through. You know, I can't keep up with some of this stuff like TikTok. And you got to be used to it and adapt where you can.
I'm surprised you don't have a TikTok, to be honest.
No, my fiance Rachel does. She's doing quite well.
I bet you've made a few guest appearances there.
Yeah, some of the dances and stuff. I'll try not to get involved, but
yeah, you get dragged in. So just on one of the topics you mentioned before, so you made a shift from going consulting into end user. Why do you prefer end user?
Are these strengths and weaknesses to both of them? I think consulting, you can definitely learn really fast by baptism by fire. It's really good for someone who wants to get into the industry and learn more there. It's someone being new. I prefer the customer side because I prefer the people leadership management side. I feel like you can really build culture in a really positive, high-performing way being on the customer side rather than consulting. Consulting, when I was there, it was traditionally, you know, bums on seats, you know, rotating through resources. You know, things have probably changed lately in some of the places, and I'm probably realizing that. And in some positive things I've heard too. But, you know, I've had some experiences where I was treated as resource A or resource B or resource C, and rather than actually hearing my name sometimes, right? And so it was a bit different for me from my experience. But I think you get closer to the product, closer to the team, and you can make some more positive changes working for the customer side.
Yeah, nice. And then let's talk Australia v New Zealand, because like I really got to know you well when you came to Australia for a period of time. You came over to do some contracting. You obviously have returned back, but what did you find to be the main differences between New Zealand and the Australian market, if any?
Yeah, so when I was over and when I moved to Sydney, you know, I was over at Qantas as a Salesforce delivery manager. And the difference I noticed over there was a lot more opportunity. You know, over in Australia, a lot more opportunity. You know, I think I had like 4 job offers at one stage when I was over there. In comparison to New Zealand, it's a much smaller place, there's great companies in New Zealand too. But in Australia, I think, you know, if you're trying to look for a new role or trying to make a mark in terms of your career and upgrade yourself, it's a great place to be. Obviously, the weather's nicer too, and the beaches and stuff like that, which I really enjoyed. But yeah, in terms of opportunity, I think there's a lot more in Australia. And there's a few more companies, a bit more leading edge too, over in Australia. And I did notice a bit of a culture difference too, in terms of personalities and stuff like that too. So New Zealand's a bit more laid back and humble in some ways. So it's still home to me. In Australia, it's a bit more fast-paced and enthusiastic and proactive. So those are the slight differences I noticed.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting because we don't actually see that many people going between the two, right? We see a lot of people coming into Australia and New Zealand from overseas, but actually it's quite rare to see someone make that shift. Like another example would be Courtney, who's done something similar. And there are more, right? But yeah, we don't see it as regularly as perhaps we could. And also with the increase in contracting opportunities in both regions, like I would expect to see more and more people coming to Sydney for 6 months and then going back or vice versa. Do you think that's something we'll see?
I think it's something I would encourage, you know, if someone's, you know, sort of like on the fence to start doing it. It's not much of a difference, right? You can sort of just go over to Australia, do a thing and then come back. And I think it's going to happen a bit more, if not already. You know, I found it quite straightforward. There's not much difference, but, you know, I'm quite open to traveling and things like that. But if someone's actually thinking about doing it, you know, I'd definitely say it's good to go take the opportunity and see what it's like, then make a choice and decision after that.
Yeah, worst case scenario, you can just go back, right?
Yeah, exactly, like I did, right?
Yeah. But again, I think like you loved it here. It wasn't the market per se, so it's not that Australia is a bad place to work or there is an opportunity. I think, you know, everyone is in different situations.
Yeah, the only reason I actually came back was because I was offered the role as head of technology at New Zealand Post back here in Auckland. Otherwise, yeah, I would have stayed. It's a great place to
Yeah. So let's look at your current role. So as you said before, you're the head of Salesforce capability for Xero. That's obviously, like, you probably can't get many better roles in New Zealand in the Salesforce ecosystem, like a brand like Xero. But what does that role actually entail? What does it look like?
Yeah. I think you're totally right. Like, it's probably the pinnacle of where you want to be if you really enjoy Salesforce and people leadership. It encompasses everything in terms of a dream role for me personally. At the moment, I'm looking after and leading a team of about 22 Salesforce professionals. That's a mixture of functional consultants, developers, technical leads, team leads, administrators. And it's going to grow to about 30 people soon. So these are.
I hope no other recruiters are listening to this.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're obviously looking for more people in the market at the moment. Those roles are up there. And the team's mixed between Auckland and Wellington. You know, we're looking after and using a lot of Salesforce's products. It's up there as one of the most adored Salesforce community examples that you can actually look at with Xero Central, which is great if you haven't seen it already. You know, Xero's got 2 million subscribers worldwide now using this as a self-service portal, which is a fantastic use case to look at. We use a plethora of lots of their stuff as well. So, you know, it's a great place to be. The culture's amazing. Xero has these values that we live by every single day. They call them hashtag human, hashtag beautiful, hashtag ownership, hashtag challenge, and hashtag team. And it's not just a poster that we just put on the wall and just walk past every day and ignore. We actually have it in all our presentations. We actually grade ourselves and lots of the team meetings that I have with my Salesforce team on our values and how we're living them every single day. You know, we challenge people if they're not living to those values as well. You know, what's that hashtag human, the way you behave in the office or the way you behave with someone? Did you do your best in terms of Salesforce development, in terms of hashtag beautiful? Was it a beautiful experience, product, you know, and hashtag ownership? Did you see that deployment to the end? Did you wait in production and make sure that, you know, our users are looked after accordingly? So, you know, Xero's got a great way to live and be in the office. You know, it's pretty much like the Google of New Zealand. That's the way I like to see it.
Yeah.
Ping pong tables, pool tables, foosball tables, vending machines.
No gym.
Yeah, there's a gym at both places. They don't
have
enough weights there. they've got an in-house barista, you know, making coffee and stuff. It's a great place to work, and I love working there. It's amazing.
Sure. So another angle of being a manager isn't just managing down, it's managing up. And I think that's also something that people don't really necessarily think about when they're looking to move into leadership. They're looking at just... So in a role of capability manager, what are the expectations of you?
So there's a couple lenses I like to put on this. Is, you know, personally, I don't like to have a hierarchical approach to things. You know, with the new age leadership, you know, I do prefer that everyone's sort of equal and there's no up or down. I like to, you know, lead together as a team and collaborate. It sounds cliche, but that's where I like to do it. But obviously, there's still that hierarchical play at the stage. So, you know, the way I like to do it sometimes is just empowering the people above me in terms of knowledge, you know, show them what's going on in terms of Salesforce, you know, use my expertise, use the team as much as we can to help empower the people above us to make the right decisions, right? So showcasing the capability of what we're capable of, showcasing the capability of our growth and opportunities, our learnings, our development, and giving the right information to people above us to make the right decisions, right? You know, that's probably one way you can do things if you're looking at, you know, trying to apply things in your own company. But I think for me personally, I try to live with the field as much as possible and try to keep that really flat rather than an up or down.
Sure. And then looking, you've mentioned all of the different skill sets within your team. Do you find that different skill sets need to be led differently? Like, do developers look at things in a different way or need a different style of leadership to an admin and a functional consultant?
Yeah, like it's I don't like to stereotype, right? but I like to use a DISC personality types. That's one way to do it, right? So,
and what's your DISC?
I have a guess.
Oh, okay. So I only know the colors. It's like red, green.
Yeah, so I'm I, so the red one, so full on influencer.
Yeah.
So I like compliments. I like working with people. that's what feeds me. I like encouraging people, collaboration, and stuff like that. But
then, yeah, my one was direct. Yeah, I don't know, like
D, I think you're D, bro.
Yeah.
So you like goal driven stuff. You like
yeah.
Like results. You know, it's not stereotyping, but you want to bulldoze your way through to try and make sure it happened, you know. So
yeah,
that's usually your default behavior. It doesn't mean that someone's the opposite person, though, right?
Sure.
You know, so in terms of Salesforce people, you know, you might have some developers who are more, you know, conscientious, you know, really like the detail side of things, being quite analytical, you know, so they want all the information up front. And so they can make decisions. They prefer sometimes to work by themselves and given the tasks to do, you know, and they carry it off from there. And then you might have people that, you know, a functional consultant who's more of an I or an S, is very supportive or influencing and prefers the people side rather than the actual detail. So they might skim over the detail, they might make some mistakes, but they work well together with someone who's actually a C, right? So that's when you kind of start to play with it a little bit. And ensure that people are working together to cover each other's strengths and weaknesses. So
yeah, nice. Yeah, it's cool because I've done those before. I did one with Gemma when she first joined the business because I wanted to make sure that we worked well together. Not it wasn't as part of the hiring process. It was just more like I don't want to step on her toes be too direct. And she wanted to know how to best position information to me and so on. And it actually works really well. So is that something you do as part of your onboarding, like your actual hiring process, or just once someone, you've identified someone, you then go through that process?
Yeah, so Xero don't do it as a whole. The whole company does it now. Yeah, so I used to do it without having, so I use Gallup as well, quite a lot of Gallup, Clifton Strengths, DISC as well. And sometimes the 16 personalities, you know, Myers-Briggs, ENFP, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just get some inside knowledge on the people who they are. When I was at Les Mills, we actually put up a Myers-Briggs on the wall and everyone can see, you know, who's what. At Xero, we have the DISC personality types. We've got a big graph so we can see where the dots are of each person.
Stuff
like that. Yeah, so it's really useful information, right? I don't like to stereotype and put people in boxes, but it's like, oh, that explains a little bit about some of their default behavior, right?
Yeah, nice. So just before I wrap up, is there anything you learned about your own leadership style through COVID? Because New Zealand have done an amazing job, right? You guys, like, you can pretty much go back to the gym now, I think.
Yeah, man, we're level one now. So Jacinda's amazing, right? Amazing.
Yeah, what a leader, right? Talking about leadership.
Yeah. Just to compare Jacinda to some other narcissistic people out there in the world, and you'll understand leadership is and bad leadership is, right? Yeah, I think, you know, for us at Xero, we're going back to the office soon. Next week, actually. So I'm going back on Monday. You know, so it's going to be a staggered approach that they're putting. They're doing bubbles kind of thing. So like, you know, 50% in, 50% out. That's what you get over in terms of a roster. Mm-hmm. But eventually it'll be pretty much everyone in there. And I think from our perspective at Xero, we've got some great leaders in terms of Steve Amos, who's our CEO at the moment, and Rachel Powell. And both these leaders, they're really empathetic in the way they approach things. They put people first. And they've been very caring throughout the whole process, been very kind. You know, we've also got Craig Hudson, who's also in the media quite a lot. And we were very lucky, actually, to have some leaders like this that just understand what it takes and what the new way is in terms of how to lead people. Right? So my psychological safety is a really big thing. It's played a lot here in Xero, and a firm thing that I believe in too, that we try to create that environment where people are really safe, right, and giving them purpose and having that strong sense of vulnerability, right, and having that courage to be able to break out of our armor and actually have those strong conversations in a safe environment. And whether that's on the personal front because of having, you know, COVID challenges, or whether it's just challenges in general, you know, we've been very lucky that we have that environment that we can actually withstand through some of these things and come out the other end a bit more positive. So very grateful to be here and be in an environment like that. Yeah, have some great leaders that actually, you know, live some of those values and instill them every day.
Yeah, perfect. Well, look, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the chat. It's really good to catch up with you and see that you're doing so well over in New Zealand, but that's no surprise. And look forward to seeing what the future holds.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I really appreciate it. It's always good to see you, and yeah, we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.